responsibilities.
On Tuesday, on his final day in Rome, Zarif met with a delegation of lawmakers from the Italian parliament at the Iranian ambassador's residence, Max Civili, Rome.
Free at last. Emerging from the gloom of a four-month COVID-19 lockdown, most Britons are now free to hug, albeit cautiously, visit their pub, sit down to an indoor meal, or visit the cinema. Freedom beckons once more. There is excitement.
I'm happy that I could go to the movies again, you know, because it's just been like you're running out of things to do.
We've just had a lovely lunch. First time putting all those months inside a restaurant. It felt good.
But beside the euphoria, there is also anxiety. The emergence of the Indian variant of COVID-19.
I'm told that if it's only marginally more transmissible, we can continue more or less as planned. But if the variant is significantly more transmissible, we're likely to face some hard choices.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Perhaps the toughest of those choices, another lockdown. Some scientists, among them the government's chief medical officer, have warned of a summer surge in cases.
All the modelling suggests there is going to be a further surge, and that will find the people who either have not been vaccinated or where the vaccine's not worked.
So far, nearly 70% of Britons over the age of 18 have been offered their first dose of the vaccine, with the government saying the country is in a race between the vaccination program and the virus, especially the new variant first found in India. That's been surging in several areas across England.
So will there be another lockdown? Boris Johnson has called the lockdown roadmap cautious but irreversible. And last month he came under fire for allegedly saying, let the bodies pile on high in their thousands, after reluctantly approving a second England-wide lockdown late last year.
It'd be obviously disappointing, but I would say not entirely unexpected, to be honest.
Steps need to be taken to deal with it. And if that means additional vaccination surges in areas where it exists, or local lockdowns, or nationwide, or travel restrictions, then my belief is that those should be brought in.
The UK's official death toll is nearly 128,000, Europe's highest figure and the world's fifth largest, after the United States, Brazil, India, and Mexico. And the possible outbreak of the Indian variant is sure to upset the Johnson government's roadmap out of lockdown. Saeed Puriza, London.
The families of the victims of the recent deadly attack near a school in Kabul call for proper attention to be paid to those affected by the incident. The families put the casualties at 90 deaths and over 240 wounded, all students. They also called on the international community, the UN and human rights bodies to probe the brutal attack. Referring to repeated targeting of Shia people by terrorist groups in Afghanistan, they also urged the international bodies to officially confirm the systematic genocide of Shia people in the country.
The attack on Sayyid al-Shuhada school came after a series of targeted attacks on Shia religious sites, educational centers, and sports clubs. It's a genocide, and we want the government and international bodies to officially confirm Shia genocide in Afghanistan.
But as observers say, it seems that neither terrorist attacks nor political obstacles can push back the determined young generation of Afghanistan, as they are fully committed to go forward in order to build their own country by relying on knowledge instead of war and violence.
The government has not yet fulfilled its obligation to protect us. The recent attack on innocent schoolgirls was a big tragedy, and such incidents must be stopped in the future. The enemy must know that we will go forward despite the challenges.
It was in the afternoon of May 8 when three back-to-back blasts rocked western Kabul, and many fasting residents of the area witnessed how dozens of schoolgirls were hit by these blasts. Although the Taliban has denied any involvement in the attack, but none of other terrorist groups, including Daesh, has claimed responsibility too.
Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission has emphasized on the need for a practical step from the government. President Ghani has already ordered a thorough probe into the attack and has called on his government to work on a plan to boost the security in Kabul. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Thousands of Yemenis headed to the streets of Yemen's capital Sana'a to express solidarity with the Palestinians on the Gaza Strip facing the Israeli relentless lethal bombing campaigns.
The Yemeni people have shown that the issue of Palestine is their red line. They have always voiced their support for the Palestinian cause. The Yemenis believe that Palestine is a sacred land and the occupation must come to an end at any cost. Yemenis crave for jihad in Palestine, even though Yemen is subjected to a brutal war for 7 years now.
Protesters blame the EU is as complicit in the Israeli war crimes against the women and the children of the besieged Gaza Strip. They urge the Palestinian resistance groups to carry out further retaliatory rocket attacks against Israel.
Yemen's stance has been renewed along with the growing strength of Palestinian resistance in the Gaza. The massive march confirms that the Yemenis stand by our side against the Israeli occupation. We salute the Yemeni people for their steadfast support despite being involved in a deadly war and siege for years.
Yemenis have also lambasted countries, some Arab states, for normalizing their relations with Israel. They said it is a great betrayal to all Muslims around the world.
It is clear that the normalization of relations with Israel is aimed at obtaining the praise of America and Israel. But the aggression happening today against the people of Gaza reveals the extent of their betrayal of the Palestinian cause and all Muslims.
Israel has renewed its attacks on the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in what has become the heaviest war against Palestinians over the past 7 years.
Holding up Palestinian flags, people here voice their solidarity with the Palestinian cause. They say the international community should hold Israel accountable for its war crimes and continued violation of the international law. Iyad Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Started a normalization phase after 3 weeks of lockdown. A 15-day long period of eased but not lifted restrictions has started in the country as daily numbers of new infected started falling. Due to the measures taken during the holy month of Ramadan, the numbers decreased from 60,000 per day to something near 10,000. Turkish president said the country hoped to overcome this pandemic as the new waves across the world has badly affected the situation in Turkey. He also stressed the importance of taking the vaccine to overcome this phase so that Turkey could go back to normal life soon.
Normalleşme adımlarını atıyoruz.
We have started implementing our normalization calendar as of Monday. The restrictions will be eased in phases until the end of May and significantly as of June.
Experts say that the gradual normalization would not result in another increase in the numbers of daily infections. They also advise citizens to minimize their home visits to relatives and friends, as well as stay away from shopping malls and crowded areas.
The number of daily infection cases has reached a logical point, paving the way for easing the lockdown. We need to ease the lockdown to make a balance between containing the spread of the virus and allowing our people to go back to work and get prepared to welcome tourists. Our economy has been negatively affected with the lockdowns over the past year. We are trying to continue with the vaccination campaign. The government is now trying to get more vaccine jabs.
Most travel restrictions will be lifted, but nighttime and weekend curfews will remain in place, and restaurants will only open for food deliveries. With the new measures, Turkey hopes to compensate the economic losses it sustained over the past year. If tourists don't return to Turkish beaches this year, the nation's current account balance and lira are likely to be hit. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
In a rare show of strength, the opposition parties and the government joined hands in Pakistan's parliament to pass a unanimous resolution or what it said, unending war crimes against unarmed Palestinians by Israel. The parliament called on a 57-member bloc of Muslim countries, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, to now undertake decisive steps to bring an end to ongoing unilateral war against innocent Palestinians. However, not very far from the parliament, the anti-Israeli protesters are not willing to trust OIC, given its track record of failures. The protests in Pakistan are expanding given the relentless bombing by Israel killing Palestinians since last week when Israel imposed unilateral war on Gaza after it attacked the third holiest site of Islam in the occupied eastern Jerusalem.
If their anger is not being expressed by the leadership of the Islamic world, I think they will go on their own. And I believe that an Arab Spring is about to restart. And this Arab Spring is not going to just remain to the Arab boundaries, but it will even come to Pakistan and beyond.
We want action against Israel!
These are Pakistani journalists. They are at pain over a growing scale of violence against international media networks and journalists in occupied Palestine by apartheid state of Israel. They protested and observed Black Day against Israel for killing innocent Palestinians and bombarding commercial infrastructure, housing international media networks, and Palestinian residents. International Federation of Journalists and Political Analysts point out that the frequency of the incidents with which journalists have been attacked with potentially a lethal force in the occupied Palestine indicates about the existence of a formal official policy to silence the media networks and journalists who are struggling hard to document the war crimes of Zionist state. However, so far, Israel has enjoyed impunity from all the war crimes it has committed against the unarmed Palestinian, given the fact it enjoys unconditional support from the U.S. and other NATO allies in the Europe.
It only goes to show that the American moral power and European moral ascendancy also has limits. They are fast losing their moral authority to lecture the world on human rights.
More protests are planned on Friday when the clerics in hundreds of thousands of mosques and Islamic schools are expected to make anti-Israel speeches. Javed Rana, Islamabad. It is the beginning of a series of public protests in Pakistan over no let-up to the atrocities against Palestinians by Israel in the occupied land. Like elsewhere in the Muslim world, people are raging with anger in Pakistan since last week when Israel attacked Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds Sharif and later waged a unilateral war against unarmed Palestinians in Gaza. The Al-Aqsa is the third holiest Islamic site, the desecration of which by Israel has led to the beginning of a renewed wave of public anger against Israel in this part of the world.
Israel!
More protests have been planned to build a public pressure on government to stop ongoing attacks on unarmed Palestinians. Before protests like this one spread across the country, Pakistan has raised the issue in a virtual emergency meeting of Executive Committee of Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, a 50-member bloc of Muslim countries.
There are no words strong enough to condemn the systematic and barbaric crimes against the Palestinians. The deteriorating conditions in the occupied Palestinian territories due to the illegal practices of Israel, the colonial policies, and its continued aggression, siege, and collective punishment are sickening.
However, people attach little hope with the OIC, given its track record of doing little beyond issuing anti-Israel statements. People are particularly angry against the Muslim rulers, including their own, for restricting their official reaction so far to mere customary statements of condemnation, which they say is no longer acceptable to them. They want particularly Pakistan, Turkey, and Iran to undertake concrete measures to prevent of what they call Israeli aggression at a time when many Arab countries have been allegedly siding with the apartheid state.
Our Prophet, peace be upon him, said that Muslim nation is just like the one body. If one part of it gets injured, the other part would feel its pain. Israel is committing atrocities on our children, brothers and sisters. It is obvious that we feel its pain. Our hearts beat with our Palestinian brothers. Pakistan and other Muslim countries now must declare a jihad against Israel.
The latest round of Israel's unilateral attacks started after Palestinians resisted the forcible eviction from their homes in the eastern Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Since then, Israel has killed scores of Palestinians, including women and children, and injured many others. The housing and commercial infrastructure, including offices of international media houses in Gaza, have also been bombarded to silence the reporting of events from the occupied land. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Hundreds of Austrian protesters gather outside the office of Chancellor Sebastian Kurz, expressing their anger at the government's decision to take Israel's side as it continues its deadly bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip.
Protesters were not given legal permission for a large demonstration, but they did gather outside the Chancellery, expressing outrage at the fact that the Israeli flag has been hoisted on top of this building.
Organizers said that by raising its flag and expressing solidarity with Israel, the government has violated Austria's constitution.
Our main protest is we want this flag to be down, because this flag is against our constitution. Our constitution stipulates neutrality, and our government takes side with a war party, with a party which violates systematically the rights of other people, of the Palestinians. They evict them, they ethnically cleanse them, they take their land.
Political commentators say Austria's one-sided political position runs contrary to the country's traditional policies founded on democracy.
This is unbelievable, and I'm sure that many of the Austrian people, because nobody was asked about this, this was a coup d'etat, this with the flag. And I'm sure that many of the Austrian people don't accept this. I'm here because we are siding the Palestinians, we are fighting their rights, but we are also protecting our rights as Austrian, as European Democrats.
We want the Palestinian people to know, and we want the Israeli government and the Austrian government to know that we will not be quiet, that we cannot be quiet down, and that the Palestinian people have a right on their land, and they have to stop this colonial expansion now.
Activists say they will continue their attempts to pile public pressure on the government and are calling on authorities to give them back their right to demonstrate. Homalezgi, Vienna.
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Thank you.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely, thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Debate.
The Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip has continued, claiming civilian casualties while destroying vital buildings and infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. In this edition of the debate, we will look at whether the Israeli bombing constitutes war crimes or not. We'll also look at how the world condemnation against Israel has reached a level that it may lead it to the unraveling of Israel itself. Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate is Kevin Barrett. He's an author and Middle East expert who joins us from Madison. We also have Daniel Kovalik, a human rights and labor lawyer who joins us from Pittsburgh. I'd like to welcome you both. And Kevin Barrett, let me first start with you. Israel's bombing of the Gaza Strip has destroyed vital infrastructure, including medical facilities, media outlets, and electricity infrastructure. Some of this is required for daily, basically, existence of the Palestinians there in the Gaza Strip. Has Israel committed war crimes?
Absolutely. Israel is the only country that virtually admits to deliberately targeting civilians. That's what they mean when they talk about mowing the lawn every few years and killing a couple thousand more Palestinian civilians. They are utterly shameless in targeting civilian buildings, as the international mainstream media people found out to their chagrin last week when this media building was blown up. Israel claims sometimes that when it's indiscriminately raining down bombs on Gaza, that it's thinking that maybe there are tunnels beneath some of these homes. That's their excuse for just blowing up anybody. But we know from the behavior of the Israeli military in situations like the deliberate sport shooting of children, which is still going on. We just saw more of this in the West Bank just today. A number of children, including a 15-year-old YouTube star, were deliberately murdered by Israeli troops who were a couple of hundred meters away in no danger whatsoever from any rocks or anything. They're just killing these kids. Chris Hedges wrote about actually witnessing this many years ago when he was in Palestine. He actually saw the Israeli troops broadcasting out obscene insults on loudspeakers in order to lure Palestinian children out of their homes within range of the guns so the Israeli soldiers could shoot them in the gut for sport. So this is the kind of army we have in Israel, the so-called most moral army in the world, as they call themselves, laughing with duper's delight at the big lies that they spread, as they know very well that they are the most sadistic people in the world who actually enjoy murdering children. So when they bomb Gaza, they're not really thinking that they're going after military targets, and oops, they just happened to kill some civilians or blow up a media building or blow up some ambulances or some hospitals or some United Nations installations and so on. That's what they're doing as a matter of policy, is targeting civilians. That's called terrorism, and Thomas Suarez, in his book State of Terror, exposes how terrorism has been the prime weapon all along in the creation and maintenance of the illegitimate so-called state of Israel.
Okay, well, Daniel Kovalik, what we're seeing unfold right now is pretty much reminiscent of what has occurred in the past wars. At this point, Gaza hospital overwhelmed with the wounded. Gaza city medical workers don't have a certain medical and life-saving medication, for example, to deal with the wounded. And, of course, the number of injured keeps increasing because of the way that the buildings have been destroyed, etc. Why hasn't the international community at least provided the humanitarian relief that is quite necessary in order to at least be able to save some of the injured that are flowing into the hospitals, for example?
Well, I think the United States has been a big impediment to any attempts by the United Nations Security Council to address this issue, either with humanitarian aid or with a demand for a ceasefire. Apparently, President Biden has now on three occasions prevented the Security Council from issuing a resolution calling for the Israelis to stop these attacks. Meanwhile, of course, Joe Biden has also approved over $700 billion in emergency assistance for ammunition for the Israelis. That is, apparently the Israelis are running out of ammunition to keep killing people in Gaza, and so Biden's going to make sure they still have that ammunition. So, in short, the answer to your question is the United States. That is the largest impediment to making sure that Israel does the right thing here and that humanitarian aid is provided to the Palestinian people.
Well, Kevin Barrett, I believe that from what our guests there said about the $735 million worth of precision-guided missiles that the U.S. has approved as an emergency, this probably falls under the notion by the U.S. of the right to self-defense, in which, in this case, Israel has that right against the people that it has colonized. You know, we're looking at then grave violations to happen. Is that a green light when you have the right to self-defense to then commit, in some cases, war crimes?
Well, the United States government is complicit in this big lie among so many other big lies. They claim that Israel is acting defensively, but that's utterly ridiculous. as we all know, the people who created Israel, who were in fact mostly atheist, ethnically Jewish Zionists who worshipped a kind of collectivist military project to invade the Holy Land, these people were obviously aggressors. They crossed the oceans and the seas to invade somebody else's homeland with the intention of expelling the people who lived there and or murdering them and ethnically cleansing the Holy Land so that they could set up their supremacist state. So that was a quintessential act of aggression. In all of the history of military aggression, there's really never been a more clear-cut case than the Zionist aggression that colonized and ethnically cleansed Palestine. So the problem is that the Zionists themselves are the world's leading experts on being perpetrators and oppressors and pretending to be victims. Just like bullies on schoolyards will grab their victims' little hands and slap their own faces with those little hands and say, "Ha, you attacked me," and then they can horribly beat up their victims, that's what the Zionists have done. They pose as victims when actually they are powerful oppressors. And the United States does the same thing. The United States, before each of its major wars, has set up or orchestrated a false flag attack to justify its war and to make the United States look like the victim. From the Mexican War, in which the U.S. invaded Mexico, started to shoot up and then broadcast front page headlines saying Mexico attacks the United States, to the Remember the Maine incident, in which United States agents blew up their own ship, the USS Maine, and blamed it on Cuba, to the Lusitania incident and the Zimmerman telegram that launched U.S. involvement in World War I, to the orchestrated Pearl Harbor deception, in which the U.S. used an eight-point plan to trick Japan or force Japan into attacking first and make them look like the aggressors in World War II, to the Gulf of Tonkin incident that brought the U.S. into Vietnam, making it look like the Vietnamese had attacked an American ship, to the mother of all false flags, the September 11th event, in which the U.S. and Israel together blew up the Trade Center, murdered 3,000 Americans in order to make it look like radical Muslims and Palestinians were the aggressors. They've been doing this forever. The bullies want their victims to look like aggressors, and they themselves, the bullies, want to look like victims. That's the game. That's the big lie that the Israelis and the U.S. are putting out, but more and more people are starting to see through it.
Well, Daniel Kovalik, you talked about the U.S. and the U.N., I believe, in your last statements in the beginning of that. Why is it that the U.S. has blocked three times now, and it appears that it's going to do it for the fourth time, the adoption of a joint U.S. Security Council statement which calls for a halt to Israeli-Palestinian or the onslaught of Israel's offensive on the Palestinian territories in the Gaza Strip in particular and the protection of civilians?
Well, because the U.S. views Israel as its beachhead in the Middle East. The U.S. supports Israel because it sees it as the one country it can use to exert influence and to project power in the Middle East. And it will do anything to protect Israel's interests, even by supporting Israel's war crimes. And these are war crimes that are being committed in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, where there are pogroms now being committed against Palestinians with the assistance of Israeli security forces. But this is all according to plan. The plan is for Israel to take over all of Palestine and beyond, and the U.S. supports Israel's dream of a greater Israel within the Middle East. But this is not about religion. Truthfully, this is more about whiteness than it is religion. This is the U.S.'s ability to project white supremacy in the Middle East through Israel, and it is a disgrace, and it is heartbreaking.
Well, Kevin Barrett, there seems to be this other narrative, which many are saying, descriptions that involve things like a tectonic shift. This time it's different, as some are saying, about what has happened, especially since there is this momentum behind world condemnation, and we see it in the protests that's happening in the masses. And many are saying that this is similar, very, very much like what happened to the apartheid regime in South Africa before it was abolished or before it ceased to exist. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I think that's a good comparison in many ways, actually. Both South Africa and occupied Palestine are settler colonial societies. That is, unlike normal colonialism, which was bad enough, where Britain, France, and other countries moved in and took over countries, stole their resources, exploited their people, the settler colonial societies like South Africa, Rhodesia, French Algeria, and of course occupied Palestine brought replacement settlers in and expelled the natives. And those societies tended to mistreat the native peoples even worse than the normal colonialists. So there is a very good comparison. And it seems that just as in right around the time that the world changed at the end of the Cold War, there was a mass awakening to the evil of apartheid South Africa. And I'm proud to say I participated in that to some extent. I was in college in the late 70s and the early 80s, and there were big marches and protests against apartheid at that time, and it succeeded in dismantling apartheid. And so today we're seeing a little bit of the same kind of shift here in the United States and across the Western world, and indeed all over the world. But of course, most of the world has supported Palestine, at least morally, forever, but the West hasn't, and the U.S. in particular has been brainwashed by the power of the Zionist lobby. Now, this is a debate show, so I could at least find one thing to disagree with the other guest, who I generally agree with, but I don't think he's correct in saying that the U.S. is supporting Israel because Israel is carrying out American imperial duties and so on and so forth. No, it's actually the other way around. The U.S. is paying tribute to Israel because Zionists dominate the United States, and Israel is a terrific impediment to U.S. imperial success. As Brzezinski accurately wrote, that having to support this state that is utterly loathed in the region has greatly complicated the American imperial project. So I think in any case, however we want to analyze that, the fact is that the brutal crimes and the extreme racism and the apartheid and the ethnic cleansing and what Professor Francis Boyle has argued is an actual genocide in occupied Palestine, all of this is so morally offensive that just like with apartheid, decent people who open their eyes and see what's going on and see what their government is supporting are becoming increasingly outraged. And that includes decent American Jewish people who are starting to turn against the apartheid entity. So this is all to the good, and I think that Israel's epitaph is being written.
Well, let me address the same question to you, Daniel Kovalik. I mean, I know what you said about the states in terms of its support for Israel and all that. But, you know, we're looking at some Congress women, I should say, that have voiced their disagreements, AOC and also Rashida Tlaib, in which she gave that very touching speech there in Congress. We're looking at world condemnations. We're looking at things that, again, many are saying that this time around is different. And do you think that this is maybe going down the path where the U.S. is going to be maybe one of the sole supporters of Israel and the whole world, and it's going to be too much, that it may overwhelm the U.S. in terms of how the worldwide condemnation will be in such huge numbers that then the U.S. has to rethink the way that it's supporting Israel, et cetera. Do you think that there's a possibility of that?
I certainly think there's a possibility of that. I think the reason is for the same reason that people erupted in anger over the George Floyd killing and similar killings in the U.S., and that's because of homemade videos on cell phones. You know, the U.S. media has been awful on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but now they have to acknowledge what's happening because people are putting up videos of children being killed, of children under rubble, again, of civilians in West Bank, in Jerusalem, being subjected to violence by Israeli settlers. This cannot be denied anymore. I do think this is shifting public opinion, there's no doubt. There is a hope, of course, that this will affect U.S. foreign policy, and I pray that it does. I think, though, we have to remember that apartheid in South Africa fell not only because of a shift in world opinion, but also by the outside intervention of the Cuban military with the backing of the Soviet Union, who defeated the South African military in Angola. I don't necessarily see that sort of thing happening here, but I do think that support for Israel in the U.S., the days of that are numbered.
Okay. Well, what has made a difference in some way is the fact that you have rockets in retaliation to the Israeli bombardment to land in Israel, and it has reached towns, including Tel Aviv, Kevin Barrett. Tell us what you think about that and whether that has made a difference, because the reason why I'm addressing this question this way is there's nothing else that has come to rescue not only the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but also what occurred at the Al-Quds compound, which was the way that Israel brutalized the people who went, the Palestinians who went there, who wanted to pray. And, of course, that opens up one of the core issues that exist in this whole crisis or conflict between Israelis and the Palestinians.
Yes, that's a great point. And I would respond that to what the other guest was saying, in that I think there is actually a parallel between the way that the Cubans, the Soviets, and the guerrillas in southern Africa were a major factor in defeating apartheid, and the way the axis of resistance and the rockets available now to Hamas and especially Hezbollah have changed the strategic equation in the region, in the same way that the Cuban and Soviet interventions changed the strategic equation in southern Africa in preceding the demise of apartheid. I think there is actually a comparison there, because the fact is that the Israelis have been unable to defeat their opponents in recent conflicts. They define defeating their opponents as forcing them to stop firing rockets, and they can't do it. They couldn't defeat Hezbollah in 2006. They haven't been able to defeat Hamas, and they still won't be able to now. And as Hezbollah and Hamas amass bigger and better rockets, and as the Muslim world unites, and some Christians are even waking up and noticing that the Zionist project is horrifically blasphemous and obscene in terms of occupying the Christian and Muslim Holy Land, the land that's holy in part because the Messiah, the man that both the Christians and Muslims agree is the Messiah, came from that land. And this movement made up of people who despise that Messiah and who have despised God as well, they're mostly atheists now, have taken over this holy land and just rubbed the noses of God-fearing people in the dirt. And had this supremacist project going. This is starting to bring out a religious dimension of this conflict that wasn't there in southern in Africa. And that's a lot of the force. You see, Hamas and Hezbollah are religiously motivated, and that gives them an edge. It makes it harder for them to be infiltrated, and it gives them essentially a metaphysical reason to be willing to die for a good and noble and just and righteous and holy cause. So I think that that dimension of the conflict, along with that military equation shifting to favor the axis of resistance, is an important factor that will lead to the demise of apartheid in the Zionist entity in a way that's somewhat parallel to what happened in southern Africa a couple of decades ago.
Final question to you, Daniel Kobalik. We have the BDS. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It has been going on for years now, and it has come out urging renewed economic pressure on Israel. Military embargo, boycott of firms that are complicit in Israeli occupation, and it also said the canceling of academic, cultural, and sporting events in addition to that. It sounds great, and it has done what it could, but what about it now making this call, especially countries who want to adopt a resolution or a statement that can't because of the U.S. at the U.N. Why don't they put their money where their mouth is and come on board with the BDS request?
Well, I think you will see more and more people and more countries get on board. Again, we do see, again, the comparison to South African apartheid, where you had the disinvestment and divestment movements. I was also part of that in college. And obviously the BDS movement is taking a page out of that playbook by what it's doing. And I think it is effective, not just economically, but it is an embarrassment to Israel. The entertainers won't go there and perform like they wouldn't go to Sun City and perform. You even have Jewish actors coming out against Israel and saying they won't perform there. And so I think this is putting a huge amount of pressure on Israel, and they are going to come out of this conflict right now with a huge black eye, and they will never be seen the same.
Thank you for that. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end it. We're fresh out of time. Daniel Kovalik there, human rights and labor lawyer. Thank you. And also Kevin Barrett, author, Middle East expert. Thank you for your statements. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tafoy, entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The people of Palestine are once again going on a strike for their liberation and calling on the world to join them. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Julia Conley Ryder. This article is published under the heading Global Solidarity Protest Against Israeli Regime Apartheid as Palestinians Stage General Strike. Stay tuned for more. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians across the occupied West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and occupied Palestine took part in a historic general strike on Tuesday, May 18th, and were joined by the international community, who staged solidarity demonstrations to denounce the latest attacks by the Zionist regime military, which have killed at least 212 people, including 61 children, and wounded thousands more. Palestinians across the region gathered in public spaces where they marched, listened to speeches, and chanted against the Zionist regime apartheid. Stores, offices, universities, and other establishments were shuttered. In dozens of cities across the U.S. and around the world on Tuesday, May 18th, demonstrators gathered to express solidarity with the Palestinians amid the recent spate of violence and attempts by the Israeli regime authorities to forcibly displace families in East Al Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. In the U.S., Jewish Voice for Peace worked with local groups in cities nationwide to organize marches, rallies, and vigils. In New York, protesters gathered at the Israeli regime mission at the United Nations before marching to Senator Chuck Schumer's home, the offices of AIPAC and Friends of the IDF, and Golda Meir Square, which the group symbolically renamed. Other rallies and vigils took place or were planned in Washington, Seattle, Chicago, and other U.S. cities. Internationally, there were protests in Jakarta, Istanbul, Beirut, and elsewhere. The Institute for West Asia Region reported that Palestinians who gathered in occupied East Al-Quds were met with violence by police. It's the first time in decades that we see Palestinians across the political divide take part in such a general strike, Al Jazeera, Nida Ibrahim said, reporting from Ramallah. As the Global Grassroots Coalition Progressive International tweeted, the last general strike held by Palestinians lasted for 174 days in 1936. Today, the people of Palestine are once again going on strike for their liberation and calling on the world to join them. The time has come to end the Nakba, Progressive International tweeted, referring to the displacement of more than 700,000 Palestinians who fled or were expelled from their homes in 1948. On the ground, in the West Asia North Africa region, Palestinians circulated a manifesto of dignity and hope, which called on participants in the general strike to write a new chapter of courage and pride in which we tell a story of justice and of truth that no level of Israeli regime oppression can erase. The truth is that Palestinians are one people, one society. Zionist gangs forced out most of our people. They stole our homes and destroyed our villages. They tried to turn us into different societies, each living apart, each in its own separate prison, the manifesto reads. It is now the time for this tragedy to end. According to recent reports, Gaza's medical infrastructure has suffered a major blow as two senior doctors died amid the ongoing Israeli regime bombing campaign that has killed at least 200 Palestinians and wounded more than 1,300 others in the coastal strip while straining a healthcare system already reeling from the Zionist regime's 14-year blockade. Dr. Ayman Abu Auf, head of internal medicine at Al-Shifa Hospital, died with an unspecified number of relatives when the Zionist regime missiles struck his family's home in the Al-Weda district of Gaza recently. At least 33 people were killed in the attack, according to Al Jazeera. Speaking about Al-Ouf's death, former student and Al-Shifa colleague Dr. Osaid Al-Asr told Al Jazeera, "It is a shock for me and for the entire medical community. He is one of the most senior internal medicine doctors in Gaza. That means a huge loss to the medical community." In addition to being inundated with the wounded patients, hospitals and clinics, which were repeatedly attacked during past Israeli regime campaigns, have again been hit in Zionist regime strikes. The international medical charity, MSF, also known as Doctors Without Borders, said recently the bombing damages trauma and burn care clinic in the neighborhood, forcing its closure.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.